My name is Jana Jay, and I'm here with Jelly Sanders at his home in Bakersfield, California. And Jelly has played an important part in the history of country western music in Kern County, and that's why I'm here tonight to find a little bit more about his background and also some of his experiences with the early country western music in Kern County. Jelly, where were you raised, and how did you get started on the fiddle, which is your instrument?
Well, I was born and raised in Duncan, Oklahoma. And then when I was 17, I came to California and picked a lot of cotton and all that kind of stuff for a while. And I went to L.A. and started playing country music. Of course, before I ever came here, I played a lot of country dances and stuff like that.
Oklahoma?
Yes, that's back in Oklahoma. And
in Oklahoma, then you were playing quite a bit of fiddle.
Well, yes, I started playing when I was 5 years old. And I play several different instruments. My dad had a Martin guitar. It was a D-28, and you know they're pretty large. And I wore the back of that thing out, dragging it around across the floor. That was my first instrument I played in, incidentally.
My gosh.
And then shortly after that, I took up fiddle, banjo, mandolin, different ones.
How many instruments do you play today?
Well, I play at 14 different instruments. And play the best I can, you know, banjo and the whole bit. Uh-huh. Plectrum, tenor, and a little bit of five string. And it's hard, though, to keep up on that many instruments, as you probably
right.
well know.
But the fiddle is your main instrument now,
yes,
isn't it?
Fiddle I love.
Uh-huh.
That's my main thing.
Right.
And I played for a lot of country dances back there. Before I ever came to this country, and that was a good source of income, a lot of good experience and
right.
everything, and something I love to do, of course. Mm-hmm. And then I came to California when I was 17, and shortly after that, of course, before I left here, I picked a lot of cotton and learned to drive a Caterpillar and, moving dirt and all that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then from there, I did that a short while, and I thought, surely something better to do. So I went to Los Angeles, and that's when I got started in the music as more or less a profession,
uh-huh.
which lasted for many years.
Did you play in your own band down there, or were you working as a...
Well, I worked for different ones
uh-huh.
At different times, and then a couple, three times I had my own group together.
Right.
And we worked for I worked through, of course, a union there, and we worked a lot of casual things with different artists that they'd bring in, you know, to do a show, and they need extra fiddle players or this or that, and
mm-hmm.
and so that was a great thing. Got to work and meet a lot of different artists that way.
Right. How did you end up in Bakersfield?
Well, that's kind of a long story in a way. I was on the road with Ferlin Husky in 1953, and Herb Henson, who I had the pleasure to know and to work with for right at 12 years. I left him several times, you know, for a few months,
mm-hmm.
and you know how that goes. You got to kind of take off and rest up now and then, but he called the house just before I got in off of a tour,
mm-hmm.
and he wanted me to come down and go to work with him. And so, primarily, that's what I did for almost 12 years.
I see. And since then, I know you've done a lot of recording and worked with all sorts of different artists. But before we get into that too much, can you tell me what the musical scene was in about, you said 1953?
Yes.
When you came to Bakersfield? And what was happening musically in Kern County? Who were some of the people that were playing around here, and who were some of the big names? And I think there were dance halls or something going on.
Yeah, yes, there were. Well, of course, Herb, by having the TV show, he was the number one. But for quite some time before that, Jimmy Thompson, whom a lot of people know, was the number one man around Kern County,
mm-hmm.
of course. Ferlin Husky, he was known here as Terry Preston at that time. He also started here in Bakersfield, you know, even before Jimmy or Herb, and different ones like that. That's gotten their start out of here.
Uh-huh.
But it was country, and people, it was kind of a family affair, you know, like on Fridays and Saturday nights, why people would bring their whole families, and they really turned out.
Yeah. Did you have, let's see, Bob Wills came through here and played sometimes, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. A lot of the big artists was coming through. At one time, they had, I think it was three different dance halls. They had the old Beardsley, which burnt down, and I don't recall just what year, but it was shortly after. No, I guess that burnt just before I moved to Bakersfield, which I had been here, you know, off and on, before I ever lived here. And then they had the dance hall out at the Plunge. I believe it was on Bell Terrace, and then the Rainbow Garden. That was a hot spot.
Oh.
Yeah, that was out on South Union. And
how about Pumpkin Center?
Oh, yes, don't forget that. That was Cousin Ed and the Squirrel Shooters. They played at Pumpkin Center. That was a pretty hot spot also. They had quite a weekend deal out there. Uh-huh. And got good crowds.
Well, did you work now with some of these people at some of these places, or did you, is that when you were working with Furlan pretty much?
Well, I was traveling with Furlan, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But then in 53, as I said, when I came back off the road off that one tour, I went to work with Herb. But all the time I was working with Herb, I was working with different artists also, see, because the only way I did Herb's TV show every day.
Well, every day?
45-minute show, 5 days a week.
Is that right?
And then it went from 45 minutes to an hour. And but all during that time, in 1954, I started recording with all the big artists in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you were driving back and forth then?
I went across that hill so many times I could drove blindfolded.
Well, did you ever run into Buck Owens then? Because he said he was driving that hill, too, about that time.
Buck Owens, yes. Buck and I are the best of friends. And and Buck got his start, of course, right here in Bakersfield.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't recall just when, I believe it was in 1955.
Uh-huh.
But I got Buck on the session down there as a rhythm guitar player. Of course, at that time, Buck was playing lead guitar for Tommy Collins. And Mr. Ken Nelson, who was A&R man for Capitol, knew Buck very well and liked him.
Uh-huh.
But Ken was the type of person that if you play lead guitar, you were a lead guitarist and nothing else, or a fiddle player or what have you. You know,
right.
he was that type of person and one of the greatest that you'd ever meet. But anyway, he called me one day and wanted us to do a session with the, I believe it was the Farmer Boys when they were on Capitol.
Uh-huh.
And so he wanted me to bring down a drummer and a rhythm guitar player and all, you know, three or four different instruments. And so I mentioned Buck Owens' name. And he said, well, can he play rhythm? I said, sure, he can play rhythm. And so from that on, Buck and Fuzzy Owens, Louis Talley, Bill Woods, myself, we were all going here a lot on different artists. You know, we cut with Furlan, Husky, Jeannie Shepherd, Skeets McDonald, and you name them, we were on them. This went on for a long time.
Yeah, I didn't know about that at all. So that's really interesting. So in the beginning, and Buck was playing rhythm guitar on some of the sessions that Ken Nelson produced.
Oh, yes. Buck even got in with people like Stan Freeberg and different ones like that. Ken liked his rhythm playing so well.
Uh-huh.
And Buck is a self-taught musician.
Right.
And so therefore he, you know, well liked by everybody, and so he got in a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. But he wasn't singing at that time.
No, it took us a long time to convince Ken Nelson he was a singer.
Is that right?
Oh yeah, and finally Ken signed him, and you know what happened after that?
Yeah, well now that's kind of to Bill Wood's credit, isn't it? That the Buck actually started singing because he was working.
Well, yes, Buck was working with Bill at the Blackboard, and. And Buck wanted to be a guitar picker.
Uh-huh.
And so, naturally, Bill needed help on the bandstand singing. He thought Buck had a lot of potential. So he kept hounding him about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, anyway, that's the way he started singing. And
you were actually the one then that took him down to Ken Nelson the first time, though.
Well, as I recall, yes, I was. And I'll tell you another thing. I was a great influence on Ken signing him.
Well.
Because Buck had quite a time getting started. He did some things for a lady who owned a label called Chesterfield, and then we went down to a fellow by the name of Cross, who had American Music. He was a publisher, and he did a lot of promotional stuff and stuff like that, and we cut dubs down there for him, trying to get going and all. And so anyway, Joe Mafus, whom you heard of,
sure,
and Johnny Bond and Tex Ritter had a publishing company of their own, so they liked a lot of Buck's material. And in order, see, they were going to get him on Columbia, mm-hmm, and to get, they would have gotten the publishing of the songs and stuff like that. So,
sure.
So I heard about this, and I mentioned it to Ken Nelson one day. I was on a session down there, and so Ken went out in the studio and asked Buck if he'd like to be on Captain.
Wow.
And so that's primarily the way it happened. And Harlan Howard and I waited in the car while Buck went upstairs and signed his contract.
Hmm. Now, what was Harlan doing there?
Well, Harlan at that time was trying to promote his songs.
Uh-huh.
You know, that was before he got in a few of the goodies, like, let's see, what was that first big one that Ray Price did for him, Heartaches by the Numbers?
Mm-hmm.
And he had them all in, and mm-hmm, had them for probably 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And but you know how the business is,
yes,
by being in it.
Yeah.
And until you get that one break, it is a little rough to get into songs.
Sure.
or do what you have to do, you know, want to do.
So you were helping everybody else get signed, and you were busy doing your own thing, but you didn't go ahead and sign yourself.
No, that never happened. It almost did several times, but it seemed like always something would come up, and so it never materialized in that respect. But I was very thankful to be a part of this country music. And
sure. Well, you still are, and everybody thinks of Jelly Sanders and his fiddle. In fact, just this year, what was the title, Instrumentalist of the Year, that you were awarded?
Yes, I was very happy to get that, too.
Yeah.
It's quite an honor.
That is quite an honor.
And, and I appreciate them thinking of me.
Sure. Okay, we were just mentioning some of the names of the people that Jelly has gotten started and worked with on recording sessions, and he was saying that he was instrumental in getting Buck signed, and also then when Buck was signed as an artist, you played with who else? Who formed the early, who were the musicians on the early Buck Owens records that really got him going?
Well, on when he signed with Capitol, Ralph Mooney played steel, I believe. Bob Morris, I think, played bass. And, I don't remember who was on drums at that time. I think we used two or three different ones before, mm-hmm, Buck put his own group together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got Willie Cantu, which was a fine little drummer.
Right.
We used the bass player that was with the Whippoorwills a long time. I can't remember his name at all. And he played bass on a couple of three when Bob couldn't make it.
Uh-huh.
And just different ones like that, the better musicians of the L.A. area, and, uh-huh, and of course, from here.
And then when Buck hired Don Rich, you and Don still did quite a bit of twin fiddle work, too, didn't you?
Well, yes, and then I played rhythm guitar on a lot of Buck's stuff and different things. And back then, I think I even played bass fiddle on a couple of three of his,
is that right,
of his tunes. But yeah, we just kind of switched around, and it was a pleasure working with Don. He was a very sharp musician. Buck got him, you know, when he was just a kid.
Right.
And Don was very well educated in music, but he learned an awful lot from Buck. And
sure.
And, you know, and he learned country music. He loved country music, and he lived country music.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know a lot of the twin fiddle things that you did were really, really nicely done. Well,
thank you.
I really enjoyed those.
We did one album, I remember one time, of instrumentals.
Uh-huh.
And we did Boiling Cabbage Down and four or five other instrumental tunes on it that I thought was very, very good fiddle work. And,
uh-huh,
and it was so easy for us, you know, because him and I thought a lot alike, and,
yeah,
and he was very easy to work with.
Uh-huh. And it was apparent that you enjoyed playing with each other.
Oh, yeah.
And I know he was... That's one thing I felt slighted. I didn't get to know Don. I met him on the very last concert that he ever played. That was the first time I met them. But, of course, we all know him through records. Well, Jeannie Shepherd was another one that you kind of got started. How did that happen?
I wouldn't say I got it started, but I did give her first chance to sing on radio. Uh-huh. This was about 1946 or 47. I had my own radio show on KTIP in Porterville. We did a live show twice a day, hour and a half in the afternoon, an hour and a half in the morning, and the morning show was at 5 o'clock. Mm-hmm. That's for all the farm workers, you know, yeah. And where they hear live country music. Uh-huh. And so Jeannie Shepherd and a friend of hers, who turned out to be one of the finest guitar players I ever heard in my life, a kid by the name of Gene Breeden, their parents brought him down on the radio show one evening, and I believe at that time she was 12 years old, and that was the first time she'd ever sung over the radio. And so the next thing I knew, through Speedy West and Jimmy Bryant and a few like that, she wound up on Capitol. I think Bill Woods had a lot to do with this, too, what I understand, anyway. You know, Bill was always promoting everybody.
That's true. He still does, too.
Yeah, he had a, as we were talking earlier, he had a lot to do with Buck turning out like he did.
Right.
And Bill was always helping everybody but himself.
Uh-huh. Well, in the process of helping others, he's helped himself, too, though, because, in fact, he got his name on what was that last record? Bill Woods from Bakersfield.
Oh, that was
Truck Driver's Heaven or something like that.
Yeah, Red Simpson's record. And I understand it's doing real well mm-hmm. for Red, and I'm glad. That's another boy that got started here in Bakersfield.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, who were some of the other people that you worked with on their sessions? Wanda Jackson.
Yeah, we used to do a lot with Wanda. She was a real fine person, easy to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I worked Town Hall Party for a long time, and actually you worked with Johnny Bond, Joe Mafus, Tex Ritter, and at that time Bobby Bear was just trying to get started, and of course Collins Kids was on there. In fact, I worked their first session they ever did with Columbia, and I did several others with them after that, and they were two fine kids, still are. About 3 years ago, I met up with them up in Lake Tahoe, and did a couple of sets with them.
I'll be done.
Yeah, and they're real fine people. They had a fantastic band up there.
Mm-hmm,
and so I enjoyed that immensely.
Right. And then I had Rex Allen. You worked with Rex Allen and Skeets McDonald. Now, your work with Herb Henson now. You came in 1953 and Herb hired you. What exactly did you do there for Herb?
Well, when I first came to work with Herb, he wanted me to play fiddle, of course, on the show.
Uh-huh.
And then we was going to play dance jobs out. And so I kind of more or less managed and booked the band. At that time, there was three partners in the deal as far as the dancers were concerned. There was Bill Mize, Bill Woods, and Herb.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took over the booking end of it Well, I won't say booking, but managing.
Mm-hmm.
And I set up, we used to play all the surrounding area of, say, 150 Mile, and like Flingo, Avenel, Fresno, mm-hmm. Porterville, all the towns around over the valley. And we did real well. And I did that, I guess, for about the first year and a half I was with him. And then there was a fellow by the name of Sneed took over. They dropped Bill Woods and Bill Mize as partners, and so there was only Herb, and then of course Joe was the booker. And of course we all went on salary to do the show, you know, and so many nights a week.
Well, then didn't you have your own TV show too for a while?
Well, I believe it was in 1959. I started the Hacienda Circuit.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was 1959, October the 5th, because that's one day after my birthday. And we played this one here for a little over 18 months here in Bakersfield. And while I was there, I had left Herb's show. And as I said earlier in this interview, that I quit several times but always came back. And so then I started my own show on Channel 29, which was another network here.
Mm-hmm.
And we had quite a run on it. And And so then I quit that, and I was still playing the Hacienda, and I finally went back on Herb's show while I was still working out there.
So you and Herb were together quite a while then.
We were best friends. Mm-hmm. And everyone admired Herb, I did, and all the rest. And so you couldn't say no to Herb when he wanted you to come help him out while you went.
Yeah. There's the other big name that everybody all over the country knows besides Buck Owens from Bakersfield is Merle Haggard. Did you work with Merle at all?
Oh, yeah. We worked some of the clubs around Bakersfield here together. We put stuff on tape, you know, to try to get him going. When he first landed back in Bakersfield after his bad experience there, well, he used to come up to my house quite often. And so I took an interest in Merle. I liked him very well. And he was a good singer. Of course, at that time, he sang a lot like Johnny Cash and Lefty Frizzell. That was his idols.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told him he's going to sing like Merle Haggard. And so anyway, the boy...
That was good advice, I'd say.
He had a lot of talent, really, and still does.
Sure.
He's tremendous. Every time I hear something he does on record anymore, it's amazing, you know, because he's always come up with something... so much different and everything, and everything seems to sell, you know.
That's
regardless
sure.
of what he does. But anyway, yes, I helped get him a couple of shots on Herb's show, and then between me and Fuzzy and Fuzzy Owens and Johnny Barnett, we got him a relief job out at the Lucky Spot playing out there with us and a few things. Of course, he worked a lot of the other places around town here when he wasn't out there, and you know, different joints.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a lot, you know, of influencing, trying to get him really going.
Right.
Helped him all I could.
Yeah.
Of course, at that time I was so busy I couldn't do too much. But then Fuzzy Owens took over, and Fuzzy kept on until he got him going.
Uh-huh. And well, he worked for a while with Buck too, didn't he?
I believe they did a few tours together.
It seems like
he played
bass or something and sang as a part of his show for a while.
I don't really recall. I believe he did go on a couple of tours with Buck, and then I know at one time he went to Las Vegas and worked with Win Stewart up there.
Uh-huh.
And that's another guy I used to do a lot of work with, too, was Win Stewart. He was a fine guy, and he was on Capitol, of course, at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Merle went up and worked with him for a while,
mm-hmm.
and that's how he got into this song. What was it? Wynn wrote it. Sing Me a Sad Song.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and that was one of his better
Very
records,
best.
You know, on Tally Records then.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think after he got on Capitol, he redid it.
Mm-hmm.
But he done a tremendous job on it.
Right. Well, what about? I know that you play all these different instruments. Have you done any teaching?
Well, yes, two or three different times. I taught, first of all, Gutcher Music here in Bakersfield. Fred Gutcher and I were real good friends. And then Gene Coleman was general manager there, and Gene and I were good friends, and he wanted me to teach there, so I taught for a while. And then I had so much other stuff going on, I had to drop it. And then later on, there was a gentleman who used to work with Jimmy Wakely by the name of Jack Rivers. He was teaching at Parlier's Music then. Mm-hmm. It's Pete Jones, of course, now. But anyway, he had all these students that he was teaching. He was teaching classes, 6, 7, you know, 8 in a class. And so he was going to leave town. He had a deal in Seattle he was going back to. And he wanted to know if I wouldn't come over and take over for him over in Parlier's. And so I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was teaching like about 114 students and doing all this in class and stuff like that. And that lasted for a while until I got too busy with everything else.
Too
so
tired.
I had, well, yes.
Your ears get tired.
It becomes work, you know, after so long a time.
Mm-hmm.
But at least I hope I learned somebody something.
Oh, I'm sure you did. I'm sure you did. Well, you certainly are an important musical figure in Kern County, and I know right now, in the present day, since I am relatively new to Bakersfield, and I've only been here for a couple of years, I remember first hearing about Jelly Sanders through records, and then when I came to Bakersfield, your name was all over the place because you're doing a lot of, you have your own band now.
Yeah.
And you're playing, what are some of the things that you're doing now?
Well, anymore, we don't work anywhere steady. We just do casuals. We work for the country clubs here in town and the Elks Club and, you know, in different cities. And then we had the pleasure of playing the Cattlemen's Association this year over in Santa Barbara and at the Biltmore Hotel, which was quite a deal. And, you know, we just take our pick of the gigs that come along, and that's real, you know.
It's really nice that way.
Well, it's a pleasure to work that way, you know, because, as I told you a while ago, if I said how many years you're on this tape, everybody know how old I was. But I was in it for a long time, and I played the clubs for a long time. Of course, it was a great experience and a great life.
Right.
If I had it all to do over, I doubt very seriously that I would change very many things. There'd be a few I'd change. But as far as playing music, I wouldn't change a thing.
Well, that's great. One last question. What do you think about Bakersfield being called the country music capital of the West? How do you think that got started? And do you think that's correct? Do you think we really are the country music capital of the West?
Well, yes, I think it could be very, very definitely so. Now, you take just a few years back when this got started, and there still is a lot of good country musicians in Bakersfield. Some of the best, in fact, I think. But now, at one time, you had the cream of the crop here in Bakersfield, see? All around musicians that could play anything, do anything. In fact, this is for about 7 or 8 years in Hollywood. Capitol and Columbia, mm-hmm. and all those studios down there, Bakersfield musicians was being used,
because
they were country, and they knew what it was all about and everything. So yes, I very well think that Bakersfield, with the right promotion, a person really take that financially could do it, and everything could make another Nashville out of Bakersfield.
Mm-hmm. It's not probably ever going to be the proportion that Nashville is, but maybe we're glad to keep it a little bit smaller, because Nashville is almost another big city like L.A. or New York or Chicago.
Right, right. And country music has probably did this. And two, you have to give everyone credit where credit is due. Nashville, I remember listening to the Grand Ole Opry when I was a kid back on the farm. We had a battery radio.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, we had a wind charger that kept the battery up on that. But the main thing is we listened to the Grand Ole Opry on Saturday night. That was a big thing then.
Mm-hmm.
See? And that came out of Nashville, WSM.
Right.
And so country music has been a thing there for a long time and will continue to be from now on, I'm quite sure.
Sure.
And it seems like it just keeps getting bigger and bigger, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no way that anyone's ever going to take over first spot from Nashville, really.
We can't catch them, but
we can be second.
They're West Coast rival.
Right.
Well, you certainly played an instrumental part in that, and we really appreciate your taking time to put your ideas and your historical background down on tape for us all to enjoy.
Well, it has been a pleasure, really, and I hope that I've enlightened someone on a few things.
You certainly have.
It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Okay, well, thanks so much.